Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast joining you on a Monday morning, and the Milwaukee Brewers are still in the playoff chase. They take three straight from the Chicago Cubs at Miller Park through the weekend and manage to move to within two games of the wild card spot. Still a lot of suitors for that spot, but the Brewers are among them after I don't know if it's an improbable win Sunday, but they did manage to get some big performances from people that I guarantee you no Brewers fan was counting on even a month ago. So it was kind of a crazy best-case scenario for the Brewers in this Cubs series, especially after dropping the opener. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel podcast, and I am joined in person by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tom, we just saw it. We saw the Brewers pull a rabbit out of their hat. I mean, I didn't expect them to, especially the way they did it Sunday, to be this close at this point in the season. But here we are. They are through this tough gauntlet of a schedule with a lot of last place and I don't want to say bottom feeder teams ahead of them, but teams that they should beat. It's still kind of dicey because of the personnel that's available to them. But what kind of chance do you give this team? Do you see this team as capable now of making a push and actually getting into that playoff spot?
Well, I want to correct you. You said the Brewers, you know, got it done. The San Antonio Missions actually beat the Cubs on Sunday. Tyler Austin, Corey Spangemer, Brent Suter, just on
Tyrone
and on.
Taylor.
Tyrone Taylor. Yeah, first major league hit. All he does is drive in and run with his first. You know, on 2 days ago, he was interviewing for a FedEx job, and instead he delivered.
Yes.
The first.
Oh, yes.
I'm trying to be a little bit
early.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I wrote I know you read it. I wrote after the series opener when they lost that the Brewers knew what they had to do. They had to win the next 3 games. They were real careful about what they said on the record, because if you say we have to do it, then you don't do it, then you've admitted you're done.
Right.
But they knew, JR, they knew.
Yeah.
And very impressive 7-1 victory the next night. You know, they kind of thumped them. You and I were talking about how they don't win a lot of games by 5 or 6 runs. Then a thriller Saturday night, Yelich walk-off, dumbest move in baseball that night,
incredible,
pitching to Christian Yelich. They did it and they paid for it. And then Sunday, you know, down 3-1 against John Lester, you're saying, oh boy, this isn't looking too good. Guys are hurt. Guys are coming out of the game. Orlando Arcia is running to the hospital for babies being born.
Yes.
You know, all kinds of things. They were leaking oil there. And boom. And John Lester, who just has been great against them his whole career, 2.12 career ERA, they get a 5 spot on him in one inning. Tyler Austin, who was released by the Giants. Thank you very much, Giants, the Brewers say to them on that.
It was the Tyler Austin game.
Yeah, it's a 3-run homer, you know, and then Eric Thames comes through with a big homer that we said about Tyrone Taylor. Corey Spangenberg gets a triple, scores a couple of runs. Just contributions up and down the lineup. So, you know, I think it would have been impressive, JR, if a full-strength Brewers team won 3 in a row, but a greatly depleted team winning 3 in a row is more impressive, in my opinion.
Right, and the fact that they did it, winning 2 of those 3 games against left-handed starters, like you said, Lester and Cole Hamels. Not sure we saw that coming. This team is really struggling against lefties, and with good reason. All the right-handed hitters are injured. Lorenzo Cain and Ryan Braun are playing occasionally, but they're hurt. Mike Moustakas, who does have success against lefties this year, has been badly banged up with this wrist injury. He's only able to play on defense.
And another key contributor against lefties that we forgot, Manny Pena.
That's
out
right
with a concussion. You know, they always like to catch him and put Grandal at first against lefties because he's tore up lefties this year, OPS over 1,000. So missing him too.
Right.
So I mean. Like, yeah. I said, the San Antonio Missions won that game Sunday.
Yeah, Keston Hira is still down with a hamstring. And Eric Thames, who doesn't get a chance ever to start against lefties, actually homered on Sunday. His second homer against a lefty this season. But we've alluded to it. The biggest problem here are the injuries now. And the Brewers haven't been torn up by injuries throughout the season, other than you could say Brandon Woodruff's loss was a big one. But the injuries are really coming to roost here. And Mike Moustakas has played defensively in a couple games in a row, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be able to swing a bat in the immediate future here. There's at least a few more games before we see him back on a full-time basis. Ryan Braun is able to play part games, it seems like. Lorenzo Cain is very hobbled, doing what he can.
The same. Those two guys are going to be in and out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Pena's, they say he needs a few more days.
With a concussion,
Hira might be able to pinch it by the end of the week, it sounds like. But they're going to have to be careful with him. You do not wanting to blow that hammy out and have a long rehab over the winter.
And you mentioned the paternity leave, so without Orlando Arcia able to play shortstop, the only option the Brewers have right now is to have Hernán Pérez play shortstop, and I don't want to sugarcoat this.
Well, Spangenberg can play shortstop.
Sure, okay, yeah, Spangenberg can play shortstop, and Spangenberg's been very good, but Hernán Pérez is going to have to be a regular going forward, and not to sugarcoat, he's been bad.
Like, so let's tell that story. Let's tell that Arcia story. So you and me are in the press box watching the game on Sunday. Also, Arcia is out of the game in the third inning. No mention whatsoever of an injury.
Right.
So we know something's up, right? So we ask after the game. Turns out his fiancée, Elena, I don't think she was due to give birth till November. But,
oh, wow.
But I think they had indications that they might come early, kind of like that Jimmy Nelson situation earlier this year.
And twins do come early, you know, they are earlier, so that happens.
Right, so she was in a local hospital, and boom, here they come. And so they tell him, they say he got there in time for the burst. He has twin baby daughters. Congratulations to Orlando and to Elena. Great news. No, it's all good when you have babies. But he'll be gone for a few days now. And I don't know if he'll even join the team in Miami. Maybe he'll just join him in St. Louis.
Right.
But like you said, so it wouldn't be critical if they weren't already so banged up. You know, another shortstop guy who would be up here if he wasn't hurt is Tyler Saladino, who was up playing short earlier in the year. He got hurt before the season ended at San Antonio. And it's my understanding he's still not physically ready to play. He's in Arizona doing rehab, or else he'd be up here.
Right.
So, so they got a – but you know what? Look at the Cubs. They've lost Javi Baez to a thumb injury, and then Russell Addison gets beamed.
Yeah, get hit in the face on Sunday.
Addison Russell gets beamed on Sunday, and so we'll see how much time he misses.
Yeah, and Chris Bryant didn't start with his own injury. So yes, the Cubs are banged up too. But like going back to Pérez and Travis Shaw, who's probably going to have to play some third base. These are guys that have just struggled so badly, and I don't think there's an outside the box move to be made here. I think they just have to get by with Shaw and Pérez for the most part on the left side of the infield. They maybe have a couple other options there, but those guys have to come up with something. And Pérez had an RBI single Sunday. He had a home run against the Cubs in the first game of the four-game set, so it's not like he's been completely dormant, but these are guys that have not come through for the Brewers this year, and I don't think there's anything else other than to say those guys have to show up.
But, of course, Arcia has been in a terrible slump, too.
That's true.
So they're getting great defense from him, but they're getting no offense from him. So that, as long as whoever replaces him at short handles the plays okay, they're probably going to be – it's going to probably be a zero-sum change offensively,
Yeah, that's a good point. So Adrian Hauser goes four innings on Sunday. We've seen guys working shorter and shorter stints. As expected, this is what they did in September of last year. Starters were not permitted, for the most part, to face the lineup the third time through the order. And they have had, I guess, some fairly successful results with that so far, but it's required the bullpen to really turn things around. And they have. They're not like a lights-out bullpen, but, I mean, Josh Hader was definitely back to vintage form on Saturday when he got through two innings, helped the Brewers set them up for that walk-off win with Christian Yelich. And again, he appeared on Sunday, coming in after that two-inning stint.
Which was unfortunate because Jimmy Nelson was given a five-run lead in the ninth inning
and he couldn't
gave up a two-run homer to Hayward. So Hader came in and struck out both guys he faced. But there's some bullets he used that they would have rather he saved going forward. And they're early on into 18 in a row, JR. Last year, everybody talks about how they bullpen the heck out of games. Well, two things were going on way different last year. They were off every Thursday, which let them reset their staff every Friday morning. And then they had a way deeper, better bullpen with more guys pitching great.
Right.
Jeremy Jefferson, Corey Nemo aren't even on the team now. Or is Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff hurt? Those are all great relief pitchers for them last year. So they're going to have to be careful because 18 in a row is a little unforgiving. And you don't want to just blow out all of your relievers here early on. But also, every game's critical. They've got to play every game like it's the seventh game of the World Series. It's not just that they've pulled within two games of the Cubs. Arizona's still ahead of them, and the Phillies are tied with them, and right. The Mets are one game behind them. This is a free-for-all.
And Arizona's a great team with a very weak schedule. We like the Brewers' schedule, but Arizona's schedule is just as forgiving. And they've got a great team with a great run differential. They've been good all year and maybe haven't gotten some of the breaks.
Right.
Breaks are coming now. They've just been on an absolute tear. Did lose in a walk-off fashion on Sunday, but that's still a team that I've been thinking is in the mix the whole way, and now it's kind of coming
into fruition. I don't see them falling out because of their schedule.
Right. You know, it's going to be tough to catch them. The Brewers are going to have to do almost exactly what they did last year, which is very difficult to
match.
Keep
winning. Got to keep winning.
Yeah. So back to Saturday and really several games this week. Yasmani Grandal has rediscovered his power stroke. He has more home runs in September. He's got four of them than he did in all of both August and July combined. He had three home runs over 2 months. Was still getting on base, but he was not hitting for power. He was struggling a little bit. He has rediscovered it, hitting some crucial home runs against the Cubs. It's kind of been assumed that Yasmani Grandal is not going to be part of the 2020 picture, that he's going to command a multi-year deal. He's going to be out of the Brewers' price range. It's also notable that the Brewers don't have a lot of great major league options at catcher. I mean, they have Pena, who's, I think, a pretty solid backup, but... You know, you're not going to mistake him as a guy who's going to go back into a starter's role. Some of their top prospects haven't been, you know, Jacob Nottingham has struggled. They got a couple guys at Mario Feliciano, advanced Class A, but they're not going to be major leaguers next year. What are the odds that they entertain bringing Grandal back, trying to negotiate with him for a long-term deal? Is there any chance we see him in a Brewers uniform beyond this season?
Well, other teams will dictate that by what they offer, you know. The Brewers will tell him go out on the market and see what's out there and then get back to us, you know what? They have a mutual option with them, but that was done more of a bookkeeping thing to take some of the money off of this year's books.
Right.
But the mutual option does open the door to talking to him, you know. you don't ever see both sides exercise a mutual option. It's more, like I said, it's more bookkeeping and accounting than it is actual, you know, contractual negotiations. And so... I'm sure they'll tell him to go see what's out there and then come back to them. And if he gets offered a big multi-year deal, then he's going to go. You know, he's coming up on the age where analytics tell you to be careful with multi-year deals.
Especially
for catchers.
Yep.
And so we'll see. I mean, they got, you know, these are for future podcasts. Here. We got a lot of personnel stuff to talk about at the end of the season on our podcast. This for a team that almost went to the World Series last year and is in the thick of the wild card race right now. They got a ton of personnel stuff coming up. So let's table those discussions.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Catcher, third base, starting pitching, first base to a degree, shortstop to a degree. Lots of holes to fill. One hole that's going to be filled for the next couple of years is right field. Christian Yelich had a couple MVP moments this week. Hit a game tying home run in the ninth against the Astros. Brewers split with the Astros, which is an achievement in its own right. The Brewers ended up losing that game, but Yelich again doing crazy good things. And then on Saturday against the Cubs, like you said, they decided to pitch to him with a runner at first and two outs. Interesting choice. He doubles into the corner. Tyler Austin scores from first, and the Brewers win that game in the ninth on a walk off. It's tricky when you're talking about future contracts with that guy because he's such a favorable deal for the next couple years. The Brewers aren't going to be motivated to necessarily try to lock him up long term. And on the other hand, there's maybe already a sort of impatience to be like, well, is he going to be gone in 3 years? The Brewers have to start entertaining what comes next with Christian Yelich. I still think it's super early for that, but on the other hand, I don't know. What do you make of that? Do you think there's a chance that they go back and talk to Christian Yelich for a multi-year deal?
They might, but there's no need to do it. And what I've learned in this new era of baseball, especially the analytics-driven baseball, and also in small markets that have budgets that have to be kept pretty tight, they don't jump ahead of themselves. You know, what long-term contracts has the Stearns regime given anybody?
Nobody.
Is Chase Anderson like the only guy that's got like more than a... I'm talking about that was already on the team.
Yeah, wasn't that already buying out arbitration years? That might have been a little beyond that.
Yeah, but I think it was something like that. And they don't have to worry about buying out arbitration with Yelich. So, you know, the thing that I will throw in there that I think would make him nervous about doing it now is the back issue that he's had. You know?
Yes.
He has sporadically missed games with the back issue. And... you know, that's probably got him a little nervous about, you know, is this going to be something that's going to really get him later? He's a young guy right now. But you know, I think he'd like to stay there. I think they'd like to keep him as long as possible. But there's just no pressing need to do it now.
Right. Another guy who's battling injury, Brandon Woodruff. It sounds like we'll see him as he works his way back from an oblique injury. It sounds like we will see him this year, maybe with a couple weeks to go, maybe by the next homestand. It's at least possible. We're obviously planning on seeing him in shorter relief spurts. He's not going to be a guy who comes in and throws six innings. But are you from? It sounds like things are fairly encouraging on that front. It sounds like people really believe that he's going to be back and contributing to this team down the stretch.
But I think for the last 2 weeks, you know, so there's 3 weeks to go. He's going to do a sim game sometime this coming week, and then you have to have downtime after that. So I think it puts you to the end of the week,
right?
And then I do think, JR, if he does okay in that sim game, that they won't say, let's do more sim games. I think they'll say, let's pitch him. But we're talking about probably one inning to start,
yeah,
then two or three. So he's just going to be in part of the 27 outs. You know, they're going to sit every night now and figure out, how can we get 27 outs? And they don't care whether the first guy gets 15 of them or four of them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they're going to do. And so, but you've got to be careful with Brandon Woodruff. You cannot hurt him,
right,
or have him blow that oblique out all the way and then go into the winter not knowing how he's going to be. So they'll be careful with him. But I do think that when he's ready to pitch, well, for one thing, there's no minor league rehab because the minor leagues are done.
Right.
You know, well, Biloxi's still playing in the playoffs, but they could be out, you know, before this podcast hits the air. So, I do think after that sim game, they may go ahead and activate him, but we're talking short bursts and not that many. So I think his impact will be negligible.
Yeah, and I guess it's sort of, you know, you said you got to manage every game like it's the seventh game of the World Series, and Craig Counsell wouldn't tell you that. He says, and he's probably right about this, there is sort of a medium level to it. It's not just another day in the middle of the season, but it's also not the seventh game because there is tomorrow, there is right. another day. All these wins are important.
Right.
But it's going to be a tough middle ground because I'm sure they're going to want Woodruff back in there if they can.
Yeah, they can't manage games like there's no tomorrow until there's only X number of games left and they're that number of games out.
Right. Yes. And there is literally,
and you literally cannot, you know, lose another game.
Right.
So they're not there yet. You know.
We've talked a lot about Jimmy Nelson. He did again struggle on Sunday, gave up a 2-run homer and then a single. He got one out before he had to be pulled from the game in favor of Josh Hader. He was given a 5-run lead to work with, gave up 2 runs. I don't know if you have an impression of what happens in the offseason with him, if they're going to try to just hit a reset button and see what happens there. He's a very interesting guy. We've talked a lot about him. I know Lori Nickel, our colleague, has a piece about him coming up here in the next few days and really a good, you know, sort of heart-to-heart with him. But I don't know what really we can expect the future to be. And it would certainly be nice to think of him as a guy who could contend for a spot in the rotation. But we've just seen such erratic results at this point that I don't think anybody knows.
I don't think he knows. I don't think they know.
Right, yeah.
I think this is something that they sit down and talk after the winter. They still have contractual control of him. But yeah. Do they want to keep contractual control?
Right.
You know, so that's something they're going to have to talk about. You know, they've seen this thing through so far, so long that – you know, maybe there's some type of arrangement that can be worked out that's, you know, fair to both sides.
Yeah.
Where if he makes the team, he earns money by pit. You know what I mean? Not a bunch of guarantee, but some. And that he may be at the point where he has to entertain stuff like that because he's no longer a proven commodity.
Right.
You know, so we'll see. That all I know is nobody works harder than that guy. Nobody deserves a better break than that guy. No one deserves to go through what that guy has gone through.
Right, right.
And so everybody should pull for Jimmy Nelson.
What do you think of Eric Thames? He had a home run on Sunday. He's hit a ball to the warning track on Saturday that would have played big dividends. He's had a really good year. He's not playing in a full-time role. His 3-year contract is up, but I believe there is a team option, or there is
for $7.5 million. Let me ask you.
It seems like a pretty good deal there, right?
Why would you not exercise
right? No, and it seems like such a foregone conclusion. Midway through last year, it was like, well, he's probably going to get traded.
I know.
Well, he's probably going to be gone.
Jesus Aguilar is going to take his job.
Right.
You know, and this Travis Shaw is going to move to first base. You know, the people already had an exit strategy for Eric Thames before it was time for an exit strategy. Well, excuse me for spending other people's money, but that is what writers do. General managers tell us that all the time. What is $7.5 million for a power hitter? You know, he's had a good year, and it's been a little bit stealthily. And there's been some games in the last month where nobody but him's done anything. You know, so
right.
They love themselves some home run hitters, JR.
And he's such a fun personality. We see it as fans, but you know that that works in the clubhouse. Yeah. This clubhouse has always been historically pretty loose, and he definitely is a big ingredient.
And he's going to strike out, but guess what? Welcome to modern baseball.
Everyone strikes out. Your middle infielders all strike out. There's no reason to worry about
it. So, I mean, again, I'm not jaded enough to think $7.5 million is coming out of petty cash, but it sort of is.
Yeah. Interesting, I guess this is still on the field. The umpiring situation in big league baseball has been a little bit under the microscope lately. We saw that in the Astros game, the first Astros game that they lost, when Christian Yelich was called out in a big spot with runners on, I believe in extras, and it was not a strike. We've seen a lot of cases of that. I think it's probably a little bit because there's that box on the screen now, right, and everyone can see sort of objectively what that version of a strike zone is. But it's also notable. Like, more and more, you're seeing calls that look ridiculous that are being called. Is it as bad as it's ever been in your estimation?
That box is the worst thing that ever happened to umpires. Because we never knew it was this bad.
Right.
You know, you assume when pitchers or hitters would woof at the umpire that he had made a mistake, but you didn't have this graphic electronic proof that he missed it.
Right.
You know, and there's also I will say in defense of the umpires, and I'm very critical of their poor ball strike calls because I think we need to be. There's different versions of that box. Like the one they use is different from the one FS Wisconsin uses, which is different from the one that MLB.com Game Cash uses.
Right, right.
So those boxes are kind of depends where you set that box. But we see them miss it by a lot sometimes. And so I don't think there's that much variance in all the different boxes that you can miss them by that much. And we just see too much grousing from the batters and the more of the batters, it seems, than the pitchers. But we see too much grousing. So, you know, they're looking at that electronic strike zone in the Atlantic League. And the Atlantic League is the laboratory for Major League Baseball right now. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of new rules coming next year. I'm not sure if we're ready for the electronic strike zone to come next year, but I think it's coming.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think they spend as much money as they do on equipment, even in the Atlantic
League. They use it in tennis,
right? And it's obviously different. It's a little more objective in tennis with the lines, but I don't think they spend the money on that equipment or try that out unless they really intend to implement that.
Yeah, they're looking at it. They're looking at it. It would have to be a total disaster.
Right, and it's not. The reports are very encouraging. And there's kinks, like of course there are, but quirks to be fixed. But it sounds like
Let's just put it this way. And again, those boxes are the worst thing that ever happened to umpires because they also get the majority of them right. You know, let's be honest about that. But they miss too many, and they're missing too many in clutch situations. That thing with Yelich was bad.
Yeah.
You know, where you got the best hitter, one of the best hitters in baseball, up in a chance to win the game, and he gets rung up on a pitch that's not a strike. That was bad. You know, Craig Counsell is a pretty measured guy, and he doesn't really say a whole lot. But when he says, quote unquote, two awful calls and calls it bad umpiring,
yeah, that's tough.
Then you've struck a nerve with a guy that's pretty even keeled.
I think the thing, in the slightest defense, because this does bother me too, the poor calls, the box is an objective measure, but then you also have umpires who will call the same pitch, and even though it's off the plate according to that, it's a call that they've made many times throughout the course of a game. So the consistency is something you can't really get from an objective strike zone.
Right.
But still, you see players get... I mean, we know. We have enough data to see that
I think we're seeing the players argue more than ever, but I do think they go between at bats and look at the replays and see that box and think they've been screwed.
And then it's cumulative. Then they're worse about it the next
time around. Yeah, they come up there and they say, "Oh, he's doing it to me again."
Right.
So there's just we've got so much more data than we've ever had in every week. You know, the players will tell you they're picked apart by analytics more than they should be. You know, and so if they want to say the umpire should be held to scrutiny too, then it's probably fair.
Yeah, you're right. Those shifts that take away a hit after hit after hit, it's a similar thing. We've got data, and it does impact the outcome on the field for sure. Jordan Lyles, before we go, this will be the last thought. Jordan Lyles, he gets the ball on Monday. He's been very good. Been a little bit of a revelation, in fact. They traded for him from the Pirates. It honestly looked like a little bit of a desperation play, the way he had pitched for the preceding couple months, but it's worked out. And then some, a guy that I think a lot of Brewers fans were disappointed that the team let him go after he started so strong in Pittsburgh, but of course came back to earth a little bit. He's got that curveball that's just really devastating. Yeah. What do you attribute his success to? to. Is it smoke and mirrors, or is this a real thing?
Well, he pitched great the first 2 months of the season with Pittsburgh, too. Then had, like, two terrible months.
Right.
I think he was set up to be an ultimate change of scenery guy. That Pirates team was going down like the Titanic since the All-Star break.
Yes.
And I also think maybe the Brewers did some things with his sequencing that was a little more productive. The Brewers really believe in throwing up in the strike zone, and he's very effective at that. And then he buries you with that curveball down low.
That's a great pitch.
He's changing your eye level and also your the speed of pitches. So I think he reset his season. I think that they started. They helped him out, told him some things that we thought would be better. I think he's enjoyed working with these catchers. And I think it's more invigorating to be playing for something.
Sure, yeah.
You know? And so, you know, we've always known this is a good clubhouse. It sounds like there were some problems in that Pittsburgh clubhouse. So just isn't that weird? You know, all these big trades get made and everybody ballyhoos them and then they don't turn out to do squat. And then you get this one and everybody goes, like you said, this is a desperation move here. It turned out to be a great move.
Yeah.
So, but this is going to be an interesting series in Miami, JR, because the Brewers need to provide their own energy and their own motivation here. They're going to play a team 40 games under 500. So in the back of your mind, you think they're going to roll over. Well, they won't.
Well, they didn't in Miller Park. They lost 2 of 3 to Miami when they came here.
But this is, you know, they won't, because these are young guys trying to show they should belong in the big leagues. There's going to be 5,000 people in this big stadium, so it's going to be quiet. It's not going to be this energy that we had here at Miller Park over the weekend. So they've got to create their own juice. And I asked Brent Suter about that after the game Sunday, and he said, "Yeah, we can do it. We can create our juice. And if anybody can create a buzz, he'll bring drums, tambourines.
He's
all like a one man band. So, but this, you know, these games count just as much,
right?
You know, and won't it do any good to win 3 in a row against Chicago if they go and lose that series in Miami? That would be a killer for them.
Yeah.
Because then it's 3 really tough games in St. Louis. Follow that.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of former Brewer connections on that Marlins team. So there's always that worry in the back of your mind that, you know, Curtis Granderson is going to have a game-winning hit or something.
But it's 3 weeks left, but 2 of them are on the road.
That's right, yep. And fortunately, there are places where the Brewers should be able to win. They're going up against teams like Colorado, teams like Miami. They've got
San Diego at home, Pittsburgh at home.
Yep, these are winnable games. But, of course, we've seen many, many instances of winnable games not necessarily going the way you think when a playoff series is on the line. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We'll catch you again next week. This has been the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, and find Tom Hondricourt at jsonline.com. He's got you covered the rest of the way. Thanks, Tom. We'll catch you again next week.
Thanks, JR.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.